Brethren, we've all been pressured by others to do something that we didn't really want to do. And we can all think back of those times in our life where we felt a little bit of push in some way to do that. Now, some of those pressures are good. For instance, children, teens, you know, if your parents pushed you a little bit in the right direction, whether it was to do chores or to follow the house rules, that's a good thing. Or for your teachers, you know, when we were back in school, whether high school or college, etc., when they gave an assignment, you know, to write this term paper or whatever it might be, we might have thought, you know, I'm really not interested. I really don't have the time. I'll never use that. But it was a good push because it was teaching us things about writing and about that topic. But there are some negative pushes that come in life. For example, let's say you're working for your boss. You put in a long week. You've already covered your 40 hours, but he says, hey, employees, I want all of you to come in this weekend. We have to do inventory or do extra work. And you might have had something planned, you know, a family gathering, project around the house, etc. But he says, you know, it's almost the attitude of like, if you don't come in, you're not a good employee. So he's pushing you to do this. Or for the salesman, you know, and years ago, we used to have more door-to-door salesmen. I still remember as a child having them come to the door selling a vacuum cleaner or encyclopedias. And sometimes people would buy things just to get them away from the door because they could be pretty pushy in trying to sell their product. Of course, we've all had friends that push us to step outside of our boundaries. So there's all this give and take and these pushes. And so there's a particular word that describes this type of behavior. And that word is the word offend. Now, let me share three definitions on this word offend, because we don't always combine it with this, what I've presented here so far. And so offend can mean to cause difficulty, discomfort, or injury. So sometimes, you know, it can be variations of this, but we've all felt that discomfort at times when somebody pushed us. It also means to violate a law. In other words, to do something wrong that goes against man or God's law. And the third definition, a lot of us relate to this more so. Offend can mean to cause a person or a group to feel hurt, angry, or upset by something that was said or done. Now, I think we've all been in that boat, haven't we? We've all heard things that arouse these feelings in us. And it's easy for us to think that our way is right, and therefore to push that on others. Like, well, this has got to be right. They need to see that, and I'll push it. Now, if it's a parent training a child, that's an important thing, but we have to be careful doing that to others. Because when we apply pressure in a negative way, it can be very troubling to those that we spend time with, you know, those around us that we are promoting this certain item. My title today is Woe to Those Who Offend. The Bible gives us a good amount of instructions on this topic. Today, I would like to focus on two aspects of offending. And as we go through these, I think most of us will recognize that we have fallen short in both of these areas. We are human. We do make mistakes. So let's look at the first point. Point number one, be careful not to offend others. It's something we really do need to think about and consider. Because when we break a law, it can hurt. It can upset people. It can cause discomfort, as I mentioned in the definition. Turn with me to Matthew 18 and verse 7. Matthew chapter 18 and verse 7 we'll begin with. And here Christ admonishes Christians to be mindful of how we treat others. We know we should be kind, we should be generous, we should be friendly. And so these things come to mind, but notice what Jesus mentions here in Matthew 18, verse 7. He says, woe to the world because of offenses. So he begins with a statement of woe. Now, I don't say that very much, but that word means a cry of grief. So here our elder brother is saying to us, be very careful not to offend. Extremely careful. So therefore, woe. And then he continues with, for offenses must come, but woe to that man by whom the offense comes. So let's look at the Greek here on that word offense. It is, in the Greek, it's scandalon, and you kind of recognize that in our English language, it means a scandal. We create this. It also means a trap stick or a bent sapling. And the idea in the old days that somebody might have bent this over as a type of trigger to release a cage door and other things to entrap an animal. So that's what it's getting at here. This scandalous event, you're trying to trap someone. So therefore the word means snare. Figuratively, the cause of displeasure or sin. Now it goes on with a couple other meanings here, which is the occasion to fall, or a thing that offends, or a stumbling block. So this word here that Christ used, you know, say, be careful you don't do this. He's talking, be careful you don't ensnare people by the things you say and do. It can create a stumbling block for them. I'd like to read that verse in the International Standard Version. It says, how terrible it will be for the world due to its temptations to sin. Temptations to sin are bound to happen, but how terrible it will be for that person who causes someone to sin. And so we know, you know, the penalty for sin is death, and we have to be careful in that. I'll also read the American Standard Version. It says, woe to the world because of occasions of stumbling. So I'll just read a part of that verse, but you get the context here. Christ is admonishing us to be very careful in how we treat other people. Our duty is to consider what we said in front of someone that would cause them to stumble, to fall, and these things do happen. Our wrong actions can be a snare. It can lead a person into sin. It can hurt them. So as ones that want to grow and be ready for the kingdom, we need to think about these items. I remember a time when I was younger, when I was coerced to do something. I think I was roughly in the 7th grade. I had one of my classmates over for the night, and my next door neighbor actually went to our school as well. He was in the grade above, and he said, hey, come join me on my paper route. We go, okay, great. And he goes, well, we have to get up at 5 o'clock. So we said, okay. So on a Sunday morning, my friend and I joined the other classmate, and we went out to deliver papers. And it was kind of like an experience for us. But at the end of the paper route, the neighbor said, let's go into this parking lot. And I go, what are we doing? He didn't say much at first. Then finally, I figured out he was checking out all the cars and stealing. If the door was unlocked, he would steal things out of the car. And so my friend also joined him, and I said, I'm not comfortable with this. And I rode down the street to wait because I didn't know my way back home. I was in a new territory. And so it was very disturbing to me, which ties in with this word offend. It offended me in the sense of, this is hurtful. This is not right. And so it's important for us to examine whether we are causing a problem for others. It really comes down to whether we're showing love. Because these individuals, my classmates, weren't thinking about me at all, just as at times we don't think of others. Let's go to 1 Corinthians chapter 8. 1 Corinthians 8 and verse 13. So Paul gives us an example here where we can cause our brother or sister to sin. And at times I think we'd all say, well, that's never my intent, but it doesn't mean it can't happen. 1 Corinthians 8, verse 13, therefore, if food makes my brother stumble, I will never eat meat again. Or I should say, I never again eat meat, lest I make my brother stumble. So if we look at the whole context of that, what Paul is saying, the issue wasn't the meat. It was okay to eat meat. The issue was buying meat that was offered to idols. It was sold after being offered to pagan gods. And I just wanted to notice here the word stumble again. It's another Greek word that you're just one number off from the previous one, and it's scandalizo. So the other one was scandalon, this is scandalizo. Basically, just a different root of the word, but it means to scandalize, to entrap, that is to trip up or entice to sin. And so these words that are written in the Bible tell us, don't cause your brother to stumble. In other words, don't offend them in this sense. And so he's reminding us that we can sin when we cause a member to go against their conscience. So we have to be very careful of how we handle things. If you look at verse 12 in the same chapter, Paul adds, but when you thus sin against the brethren and wound their weak conscience, you sin against Christ. That should even hit us a little harder. It's like, well, I know I shouldn't treat someone this way, but no one wants to sin against Christ. And so there's a twofold problem here. We not only do something to hurt that person based on what they believe in their mind, but we also break a law of God, sinning against Christ. Jump back up to verse 9. But beware lest somehow this liberty of yours become a stumbling block to those who are weak. So the word liberty, you know, referring to the freedom we have, the privilege that God gives us to carry forward with certain things. And out of love, we need to consider if our actions cause stress to others, harmful in any way. Eating meat offered to idols was difficult for those Gentiles who were previously involved in pagan and idolatrous ways. So that's why it hurt their conscience. They had been doing that. They've been asked to come out of that way of life. And now to go to someone's home and have meat that had come from the marketplace, but had been blessed in the private sector, or let's say by the priest or someone, that bothered them. And so it's important for us to consider the spiritual maturity of others before recommending something, before promoting an idea or a certain action. There's so many things as Christians that God is asking us to look at. Now, in the book of Romans, Paul adds to the list of items that we should neglect if it causes harm to the membership. I'll just refer to it. You can jot down Romans 14, verse 21. And it says, it is good neither to eat meat nor drink wine. And then it adds, nor do anything by which your brother stumbles or is offended or is made weak. So it just overlays one thing on top of the other. So basically, Paul is saying, you don't want to trip up your brother. You don't want to entice him to sin. And you don't want to make them feel feeble in any sense. So he's really giving us a lot there to digest. And so what he really means is we can live by the letter of the law and still break it spiritually or fall short in that area. So there's so much to think about. So let me give you an example of that. Let's say as members today, a new person off the street comes in who wants to hear God's way. But they come in dressed as they would going shopping or going to the beach, however. And so for us to go up and say to a first-time visitor, you shouldn't be wearing those jeans. You shouldn't be wearing that old shirt. See, we could offend them. Now, we all know we want to dress our best before God, but to put that on someone else that their conscience isn't even aware of that. They just want to come and learn what we believe and to worship God on the Sabbath day. So we have to be careful with everything we do. In other words, just because we're not breaking the law doesn't mean we don't force others or force our ways on others. So it's important to really think about that. We need balance. God is asking us to have patience and to show love in everything we do. Let's go next to Matthew 18, verse 6. Matthew 18, we'll look at verse 6. Matthew writes, whoever causes one of these little ones who believes in me to sin, it would be better for him if a millstone were hung around his neck and he were drowned in the depth of the sea. So this isn't just about hurt feelings, but includes leading a person astray or something that causes a scandal. We have to consider that. So who is the little one? Well, it could, you know, we could add a few things here. It can refer to a new person in the faith, someone recently converted, or even those not having grown spiritually. You know, they might have been here 10 years, but they haven't grown a lot, so therefore they're still considered a little one. And so here is a strong warning not to trip up others, either those in the world or those especially in the church, because here it says, don't cause even one of these little ones who believe in me. In other words, a believer, a fellow brother or sister. We need to consider that. Let's go back to James 3 as we delve into this topic a little more. James chapter 3 and verse 1. You know, one reason individuals continue to offend is many times because they don't recognize that their actions or their words are upsetting to others. You know, I mean, I don't think that most of us intentionally try to do that to someone, but we know it happens a lot, whether we're aware of it or not. So notice what James said. Here's one aspect of how we mess up. We talked about this recently when we covered the tongue, but James 3, verse 1, "My brethren, let not many of you become teachers, knowing that we shall receive a stricter judgment." So if a person can't control their tongue when speaking, you know, they will be held accountable for that. You know, I have to be careful with every word I say, because if I misdirect you, that's on me, a stricter judgment. And so there's a responsibility that comes with standing up here and teaching, or anyone, even as parents teaching your children. There's a great responsibility that you don't want to misguide someone. Verse 2, "For we all stumble in many things. And if anyone does not stumble in word, he is a perfect man, able also to bridle the whole body." So once again, the word stumble here, to trip, it can also mean figuratively to err, to sin, to fail, to fall, or to offend. And so many times these words that we read in the Bible, they point back to this offending others. And we may not put all that together. And so we must remember that we aren't perfect, and our words can cause others to stumble. Not just in a few areas, but almost in every area of life. You know, an example I remember years ago, this is back in the 80s, 1980, and that time frame. And I was living in Kansas at that time. And so one of the ladies in the church went to the normal church congregation every week. It was in Hayes, Kansas, actually. And I remember talking to her, and she said, "I can't go back here anymore." I said, "Why?" She said, "Because, see, her parents had just recently left. And it was very hurtful to her, the way it all occurred and what happened." And so when she went on that one day, the members came up and started not attacking her, but just asking her question, why did they leave, and this and that, and it was just too much for her. In other words, she became offended over it. And she said, "I can't come back here." So she ended up driving 100 miles to another congregation that was further away, just because she didn't want to have that upsetting attitude or that hurtful communication. Now, the people that did it most likely didn't even recognize. But we do really need to stop and think about what we say. Turn with me back to Ezekiel 14 in verse 3. Ezekiel chapter 14 and verse 3. And this scripture brings in a little different angle, because besides offending others, we can also offend God by our lifestyle. We may not think of it in that way. So Ezekiel 14, we'll read verses 3 through 7. And here the prophet says, starting in verse 3, "Son of man, these men have set up their idols in their hearts, which causes them to stumble into iniquity. Should I let myself be inquired of at all by them? Therefore, speak to them and say to them, thus says the Lord God, every one of the house of Israel who sets up his idols in his heart and puts before him what causes him to stumble into iniquity, and then comes to the prophet, I, the Lord, will answer him who comes according to the multitude of his idols, that I may seize the house of Israel by their heart, because they are all estranged from me by their idols. Therefore say to the house of Israel, thus says the Lord God, repent, turn away from your idols, and turn your faces away from all your abominations." So God is always encouraging his children, or his people, to come back. Verse 7, "For anyone of the house of Israel, or of the strangers who dwell in Israel, who separates himself from me, and sets up his idols in his heart, and puts before him what causes him to stumble into iniquity, then comes to a prophet to inquire of him concerning me, I, the Lord, will answer him by myself." I mean, that sounds like a pretty strong, God says, I'm going to talk to him personally. And if we do that, if we put something before God, and so we can ask ourselves, what do we set before God? You know, for some, it might be easy to put our jobs in front of God. God wants us to work hard, to do well, to set a good example. But if we're so busy working all the time and put that before our family, even before church, you know, we work so hard that we can't even make it to church. You know, I mean, we would never, I'm the kind of person, I would never miss a day of work unless I'm extremely sick. But if I worked hard all week and my boss was happy for that, but then I'm going, I'm too tired to come to church. Well, I'm setting up my work before church, because I would go to the one before I would the other. And so we have to really think about that in every area regarding prayer, Bible study. You know, what do we leave out? What do we add in that God says that's not balanced? When anything we value more than God is an idol. So our money, You know, if we idolize that too much, then it becomes very hard to pay our tithes. Because like, well, I don't want to give my money. But we don't recognize all of it's God's, and he just wants a tenth of his money back. So daily examination is vital, so we don't continue to offend those around us. Otherwise, as we read earlier, we're sinning against our Creator. We sin against Christ, who gave us life and gave us the laws to live by. Allow me to refer to Proverbs 18, verse 19. You might want to write that one down and look at it later. But there it says in Proverbs 18, verse 19, a brother offended is harder to win than a strong city, and contentions are like the bars of a castle. I think we can kind of picture what is being analyzed here. So you think about all these things that happen. You know, once somebody gets offended, it's hard to win them over. Now, this past week, I was watching the news, and it was some type of hearing, a judgment, and it was about the insurance industry, house insurance industry here in Florida. And the panel allowed people that had complaints against this bill they were wanting to pass to come forward. They only gave them 30 seconds. And as I listened to the plea of these people, I mean, they were hurting. They told about stories where their house got damaged, the roof blew off, a hurricane, flood damage, whatever. They told their story and said, we can't get anybody to listen. The insurance companies won't even come out. Or if they do, the adjusters and the papers come back and they're wrong. And story after story, and it was so sad. And then when I saw the panel, and the way they voted, and they just went like that, and they said, nope, we pass it. And what it did was it took away the right of the people who couldn't afford lawyers in most cases, that you have to go through that to get what you should already get. And so it was so corrupt. And I could see how those people were offended, because they go, this is not right. And even the adjuster said, you know what's happening? They came up as well and complained. They go, we go out to a property, we fill in all the information, we turn it in, and it comes back later to us. They keep our name on it, but they change all the facts. The insurance companies are doing this. And multiple adjusters said this. I go, look at the corruption. And so it just hit me, you know, as we think about this, a brother offended. Here's the people of the state, deeply offended by those who are supposed to be serving them. And it wasn't working well that way. So when we offend a person, they tend to put up a wall, don't they? Like, well, I've been hurt. I'm going to set things a little bit away from me. And it's harder to win them back over. Once we do that, they're like a fortified city. You can't break that wall down very easy to get to them. And yet, thankfully, God doesn't treat us that way. You know, we sin against God. We offend him greatly, but he takes it well and is willing to listen to us and to forgive us. He doesn't get hurt feelings when we neglect our prayer. You know, when we don't serve enough or when we don't honor him properly, his feelings aren't hurt in the same way we might feel. And we know God is a God of love and mercy and compassion. So he looks at it properly, and he won't force us to follow his ways. If you think about some biblical examples, we won't go into these, but consider Abraham. Remember when he offended Abimelech and he lied to him about his wife, saying, she's my sister? And you think about Jacob, how he offended Esau. He was very deceitful and he stole the blessing from him. Or Laban offended Jacob. You know, he lied about his wages and then said, here, take this as your wife. And it was like, whoops, wrong one. And that was after 7 years of working hard. So we have all these examples of individuals that were deeply offended, and God lays them out for us in the scriptures. So we should desire for all people to live a happy life, but not to coerce them to follow our standards, our beliefs. See, that's where it starts being pushy. That's where we can offend. And we have to think about that. Brethren, God warns us to be careful so that we don't offend others. We need to work on that. So let's look at the second point. Are we easily offended? So we were talking about all those that I can affect, you can affect, and now we have to look at how we're affected by this. Are we easily offended? It's pretty easy to get our feelings hurt. There's various reasons for this. You know, sometimes it's a misunderstanding. Other times it's an assault that somebody said, oh, I can insult you in a way and kind of put you down, and you recognize it. Other times it's correction, either needed correction or improper. But either way, it makes us feel hurt, just like those that we can hurt. So let's notice what the Bible says about being easily offended. Now, we've all seen others who get angry. they walk away mad, and it's, as we just read in Proverbs, it's hard to restore that. Let's notice a few examples of in the Bible of individuals who caused themselves to stumble. And we can ask ourselves, would we ever become offended because of Christ? I think we'd all say, Christ? No, I'm not going to get offended over that. Well, let's go to Matthew 26 and verse 26. Matthew 26, verse 26. So this is the final Passover of Jesus Christ. And we'll just kind of break into the thought here. And it says, as they were eating, Jesus took bread, blessed and broke it, and gave it to the disciples and said, take, eat, this is my body. Then he took the cup and gave thanks and gave it to them, saying, drink from it, all of you, for this is my blood of the new covenant, which is shed for many for the remission of sins. And then he says in verse 29, but I say to you, I will not drink of this fruit of the vine from now on until that day when I drink it new with you in my Father's kingdom. And so, if we drop down to verse 31 there, and we'll pick it up there, because to be with Jesus Christ on Passover was, you think about how inspiring that would be. You know, here's your Lord and Master, you're walking with him, you're observing a festival. Nothing should really bother the disciples at this point. They're right walking with their elder brother. But dropping down to verse 31, it says, then Jesus said to them, all of you will be made to stumble because of me this night. For it is written, I will strike the shepherd, and the sheep of the flock will be scattered. So every disciple would be offended that very evening over Christ, over him. And so what if Jesus Christ stated a similar statement to us? Would we be offended? Like, would we say, no way, I wouldn't do that to you? Well, notice Peter's reaction. Let's drop down to verse 33. Peter answered and said to him, even if all are made to stumble because of you, I will never be made to stumble. Jesus said to him, assuredly, I say to you that this night before the rooster crows, you will deny me three times. Peter said to him, even if I have to die with you, I will not deny you. And so said all the disciples. They're basically saying, I will not stumble. You know, I will not be offended because of you. And yet hours later, all of them would be offended. And were they mad at Christ? No, not really. But the 12 disciples were enticed to sin. They were tripped up, not by Jesus Christ, though. It was by themselves. They tripped up themselves, and we can do that. They added a stumbling block to their own path. So the Romans would accuse them that evening to be followers, like, oh, you're followers of this rabbi. Or we can tell by your speech, your accent seems like you're connected with them. And they, No, they didn't want to be connected. So they didn't want to be associated in any way, in a negative way, with Jesus Christ. We don't know all the reasons, but you think of fear. They didn't want to be imprisoned or tortured, maybe vanity, etc. But they all disappeared into the night. And we can also be the ones who are offended, just like the 12. And we have to really think about why we do certain things. When we remain spiritually immature, it's similar to holding on to that millstone that can drag us down as we swim through life. We need to really think about that. Eventually, we will sink if we allow ourselves to be offended. That's what Christ is telling us. This enticing others to sin or hurting people and upsetting people or even putting a stumbling block in our own path, it will cause failure if we continue in that. So we can get upset when a person attacks our character or when they go like, you don't recognize my service to the church or to my family. I mean, we all have things that kind of hit us in a hard way, or you haven't given me credit for what I've done. You know, I could go on and on with these thoughts that we've all probably had issues with over the years. They've affected us in one way or the other. And yet God is inviting us to become mature Christians. Otherwise, the difficulties that lie ahead, such as the tribulation or other trials and tough times, we will not be able to handle properly. We will walk away like the disciples did because we go, we can't go there. We're not ready for that. Let's go back to Luke chapter 10 and verse 38. Luke 10 and verse 38. almost any topic we can think of. I find it interesting that God puts stories in the Bible that you can draw out examples of all these areas in life that we need to think about and apply in our lives. Luke chapter 10, verse 38. So, as we look at this example, we can see that as Christians, we can urge others to do what we want. I think we've all done that. And church members can get offended over a multitude of things, over doctrines sometimes, like, well, you believe that way. I don't quite see it that way. Or the way people dress, we can say, well, you shouldn't be wearing that. You know, to my standards, you should be wearing something different. Or the way you train your children isn't the best way. And so we can get these opinions, and the problem begins as we share them and offend people by how we project them and speak them. So let's look here at someone that got offended. Luke 10, beginning of verse 38. Now it happened as they went that he, Jesus Christ, entered a certain village, and a certain woman named Martha welcomed him into her house. And she had a sister called Mary, who also sat at Jesus' feet and heard his word. But Martha was distracted with much serving, and she approached him, or Jesus, and said, Lord, do you not care that my sister has left me to serve alone? Therefore, tell her to help me. And Jesus answered and said to her, Martha, Martha, you are worried and troubled about many things. But one thing is needed, and Mary has chosen that good part, which will not be taken away from her. So Martha was offended and hurt that her sister, like, this is our duty, we should be doing this, and you're over there listening to this guy talk, and there's all these jobs to do. So she goes to Jesus Christ. In other words, she was trying, instead of even going to her sister, she went to the master and said, make her do what I think is right. See how we can get offended? Basically, she was saying, put my sister in her place because she's not doing what I think she should do. And we can all do that. We do that to our mates, we do that to our children, we do that to the people we work with, the brethren we serve with, and we have to be careful. And so one of the weaknesses I've noticed among members is we can get upset when others won't change certain things. Like, oh, they won't change that. And they've been here for 30 years and they haven't changed that. And we have to really be careful of that. And we can say, well, that's what God teaches. You know, that thing I want you to change, I know it's right, you should know it's right. But we have to realize then God has all power, right? And he didn't make that person change, so who am I to do it if God isn't? I mean, we encourage people. We want to help them if they do want to change, but it's not our part to go up and say, you need to change this, especially in the way we can say it. And the reason we don't do that is because it does not build character. If a person does something just because we say, you need to do that, that doesn't come from them and from their heart and their belief. And so we can step over the bounds and not allow this little one, or whoever it might be, to grow at the pace that they grow in. So when a person doesn't change and we become upset, then they start to have control over us. They control our actions because I might get upset because they didn't do it. They can control our attitudes. They can even control our attendance at church because, like, well, you make me so upset, I'm not going to come here next week because you're causing this problem. And so you see, what we do is we give over control that God says, no, each of us should work out our own salvation. We should have control over the decisions we make. And so all that can lead to bitterness if we're not careful. So we need to think about that, how we live. Let's go to Matthew chapter 11 and verse 1. We'll notice an example of John the Baptist, I should mention. Matthew 11, verse 1. It says, now it came to pass, when Jesus finished commanding his 12 disciples, that he departed from there to teach and preach to the cities. And when John had heard in prison about the works of Christ, he sent two of his disciples, and he said to him, are you the coming one, or do we look for another? So here John, asking this question, I mean, remember, John was a cousin of Jesus. He had baptized him and he had proclaimed to him. And so with all that, he's still asking, are you the coming one? That's Continue in verse 4. And Jesus answered and said to them, you know, these people that were going to take the message back to John in prison, go and tell John the things which you hear and see. The blind see and the lame walk. The lepers are cleansed and the deaf hear. The dead are raised up and the poor have the gospel preached to them. And blessed is he who is not offended because of me. So in other words, when he said blessed, you know, he says you're very fortunate. That word means it's supremely blessed. And so there's other examples of stumbling, but, you know, basically, John didn't quite gather that Jesus Christ, he was still questioning whether he was the one. And if you think of other examples such as Miriam and Aaron, you know, they basically kind of said, well, God, why aren't you working with us, just our brother? I mean, we have a part in this. And we consider Esau, how he sold his birthright, and then we could read about where he refused to repent. And he got offended over that. But there were others who didn't get upset. And we need to have that attitude as we go forward in life. And oftentimes, those closest to the circumstances get upset the most. You know, we can be caught up in it, or as it said, snared, you know, trapped in that situation that we don't look at it properly as Christ would. Dropping down to verse 18. It says, for John came neither eating nor drinking, and they say he has a demon. So they accused him greatly. Verse 19, the Son of Man came eating and drinking, and they say, look, a glutton and a winebibber, a friend of tax collectors and sinners, but wisdom is justified by her children. So John is showing us, and Jesus is speaking here, that that we can try with all of our heart, and we can't please everyone. You know, there's two examples of different lifestyles here, and the Pharisees and the chief priests and all those at that time wouldn't listen to either. They were kind of making fun of them, or like, that's not the way to go. So we need to really think about that we should not follow these examples, the poor ones that are written. And I was thinking about how every month people call to come to services, and they're excited. They go, I read about that you keep the Sabbath, I want to come. And you know what? 90% of them never show up. There's something about it. It's hard for them to get to that phase. Let's go to Matthew chapter 13, just a page or so forward here. Matthew 13 and verse 20. Matthew 13 verse 20, where Christ continues saying, but he who received the seed on stony places, this is he who hears the word and immediately receives it with joy. I will read down a couple more verses, 21 and 22. Yet he has no root in himself, but endures only for a while. For when tribulation or persecution arises because of the word, immediately he stumbles. Now he who receives seed among the thorns is he who hears the word, and the cares of this world and the deceitfulness of riches choke the word, and he becomes unfruitful. So as we think about these individuals that want desperately to come, it's hard for them to take those steps. And we have to be careful when they do make that step that we don't offend them when they walk in the door, that we don't say, well, you're required to do this from the get-go. It's taken us years or decades to get to that point. So we have to make sure we don't rely on ourselves, and that we put our confidence in God to be able to think about how others receive what we say, and then we have to make sure that we're not easily offended. It's important to have humility, to not think highly of ourselves. And so that's part of the issue with getting easily offended, that we go, well, you treated me wrong. But if we're a humble servant, we will take that differently. And the more we look to God, it deepens our trust in him. I'll refer to Proverbs 3 and verse 5. It says, trust in the Lord with all your heart and lean not on your own understanding. In all your ways, acknowledge him and he shall direct your paths. So as children of God, he's inviting us to walk a certain path, but it takes this humility. It takes this trust in God so that we know how to walk, how to treat others, and how to receive what they say so we don't get easily upset as well. And when we don't follow that advice that we just read there, it traps us in our own thinking. It literally ensnares us. We know that people do things that can hurt us, that we know that comes, but we know some of those things can cause us hurt, like loss. They can affect our health. our relationships, our finances. People do things that affect those. And so we have to ask, are we willing to suffer loss? That for humans, that's hard. You go, well, that's mine. I don't want to suffer loss because of your attitude, your thoughts. But if we had more time, I'd go into 1 Corinthians 6, where Paul reminds us that we have to be willing to suffer loss, and we shouldn't take a brother to court. You know, there might be an exception to that, but in most cases, it's not like we want to be sue happy and say, you know, you did this, and I'm going to take you to court and make you pay it. You know, if we have that attitude, like everything has to be fixed the way we want it, how are we going to handle the upcoming tribulation and times that are coming? And so our human nature doesn't want to lose something that we think we deserve. You know, it's like, that's mine. And yet without proper character, those situations continue to bother us more and more. It kind of grows. You know, in the Gospel of John, Jesus shares that he is the bread of life. And if you think some of the statements that he made there, he goes, you know, you're going to drink my blood or eat my flesh. And for some, it says after they heard those statements, it was hard for them to understand and they walked away. This says they were greatly offended. So there's so many different aspects to this topic, but we have to think about and learn from the lessons, and so that we don't stumble over Jesus Christ's words as well. A main reason for individuals getting angry or feeling hurt, one of the things is we become self-focused. We're mainly looking at ourselves and not the bigger picture of how it affects them or how God would view it, and that changes things. And so many of our problems are spiritual in nature. So that self-centeredness, or in other words, my way isn't followed, my words aren't accepted, it all becomes that selfish outlook. I saw this in the dictionary. I thought I'd jot it down and read it to you. It says, the word offend need not imply an intentional hurting, but it may indicate merely a violation of the victim's sense of what is proper and fitting. Now, if you follow that, it's basically saying that person might misunderstand, and that's why they got so hurt, because they go, well, I think you stepped over a line, but they're not really sure. So we have to be careful that we don't cause others to misunderstand, or that we aren't misunderstanding others and get offended over something that's not even worth it. Let's go to Matthew chapter 24 and verse 8. Matthew 24, verse 8. So here's a prophecy that takes place. It will happen in the future again. Christ is speaking here, Matthew 24, verse 8. He says, all these are the beginning of sorrows. Then they will deliver you up to tribulation and kill you, and you will be hated by all nations for my name's sake. So we're not looking forward to these times, but because God said it's going to happen, we know it will. Then verse 10, and then many will be offended, will betray one another, and will hate one another. So think about that. You know, these things are coming. Are we going to be a part of those many that are offended? We have a choice in how we live today in preparing for the future of what we will be doing. And then it says, then many false prophets will rise up and deceive many. So a whole host of things are coming down the road. And we know tribulation has occurred down through the ages. But at the end time, it will be intensified beyond what anyone can imagine. In addition to betrayal and hatred, many will take offense to those who follow Christ. Us. As we follow Christ, they're going to turn and have a hatred towards us. They may not even understand why, but that's the way Satan will direct the world. And so verse 10, when it says, you know, many will be offended, could this be referring to us? I think it can, if we allow it. You know, if we think about the translations of it, I'll read this from a couple other translations, verse 10, and then many shall stumble and shall deliver up one another, and shall hate one another. Another translation, the ISV, says, then many people will fall away, will betray one another, and will hate one another. You know, I have a lot of relatives, classmates, and friends who once believed as we do. But eventually, the majority of them wandered away. They wandered away. They chose to walk away. So some of the synonyms for offend means to fall, to sin, to stray, to transgress, to trespass, or to wander. So here's even another way that we stumble or we offend, is by wandering away from Christ. And there's members that have done that over the decades. We have the potential to do that, so we have to be careful. Now, members stray for different reasons. They might say, well, how in the world can the church do that? You know, they can look at things improperly. Or why would God allow so much suffering? Well, we even have a booklet on that. But, you know, there's things that people say, God wouldn't do that, but they don't look at it properly. Or this can't be God's church. Why? Look at these people. They're so worldly. You know, so we can have visions that God says, don't look at it that way. We're all little children that are growing and developing. We're not perfect, but some people can get offended over that and literally walk away. We'll go next to Matthew 13 and verse 53. Matthew chapter 13, we'll begin in verse 53. So as you all recognize, people get offended over most anything. And we do tend to carry our habits of when we were in the world, we carry them right into the church, and we have to be careful. And so there are items that offend people, such as my prayers haven't been answered, or I've been corrected and I don't think I deserve that, or I deserve to be promoted and I haven't been promoted. You know, all these things, this human nature comes forward. Or I don't like the way things are done. You know, this should be changed because I think so. You know, shouldn't you all think that? You know, it just becomes this attitude that we're focused. And so all these items that, and so people could say, how could Christ be able to do this? Let's read what he did here, Matthew 13, verse 53. Now it came to pass when Jesus had finished these parables that he departed from there. When he had come to his own country, he taught them in their synagogues so that they were astonished and said, where did this man get this wisdom and these mighty works? So he had been healing people and they saw that and they go, where did this come from? Then they say, is this not the carpenter's son? Like, we know this guy. We saw him grow up. Is not his mother called Mary and his brothers James, Joseph, Simon, and Judas? And his sisters, are they not all with us? Where then did this man get all these things? And the first part of 57, so they were offended at him. Isn't that shocking? Healing people, helping people, speaking words of wisdom. And so basically Jesus is saying, you know, a prophet is honored everywhere except in his own country. And I think we understand that principle as we live life. We begin to see that. Let's continue there in verse 57. But Jesus said to them, a prophet is not without honor except in his own country and in his own house. Now he did not do many mighty works there because of their unbelief. So I take this as it's all tied together, this idea of being offended. You know, it ties in with our faith. You know, all these things with God are interconnected. And we have to, that's why we need to be growing in faith. We need to be drawing closer to God. Unbelief or faith affects what we do and how we react to situations. So it's important to consider that. Think about how Joseph's brothers were greatly offended. Of course, they didn't look to God and trust in him to the full amount. So he turned and looked at it from a self-centered way. But we need to consider that. Let's go to Matthew 15, a page or so forward, and verse 21. Here a woman asked for healing. And she ignored a little bit. And we could think, well, is Jesus a respecter of persons here? Well, let's read a few verses, Matthew 15 and verse 21. Then Jesus went out from there and departed to the region of Tyre and Sidon. And behold, a woman of Canaan came to him from that region and cried out to him, saying, have mercy on me, O Lord, son of David. My daughter is severely demon-possessed. I'll go ahead and add verse 23, but he answered her not a word. So can you imagine pouring out your heart to someone that you think has the ability to help and to heal? But he answered not a word, and his disciples came and urged him, saying, send her away, for she cries out after us. So the disciples were offended because of she was a Gentile. No, they didn't want to associate with those filthy people that didn't keep God's laws, etc. Continuing in verse 24, but he answered and said, I was not sent except to the lost sheep of the house of Israel. So wouldn't that be kind of shocking? You go, I'm a person. My daughter needs your help. She has a demon. And he goes, oh, no, I'm going to these people. Verse 25, then she came and worshiped him, saying, Lord, help me. But he answered and said, it is not good to take the children's bread and throw it to the little dogs. What if Jesus said that to us? You know, would we get offended like, oh, I can't believe this guy. He doesn't even know how to react to me. I'm going to just walk away and forget it. But she didn't give up. And we could ask, well, how would we handle this? If we were told, you know, what she heard, you know, would we stick in there? But she was not easily offended. That's my point, is that she's a good example that really stuck in there. Verse 27 says, and she said, yes, Lord, yet even the little dogs eat crumbs which fall from their master's table. In verse 28, then Jesus answered and said to her, O woman, great is your faith. Let it be to you as you desire. And her daughter was healed from that very hour. So Christ knew her faith, and he was teaching the disciples a lesson here, and the lady a lesson, etc. And we don't always see what's behind it, but what would she have gained by being offended? Her daughter would have still been demon-possessed. And so we have to consider that God is teaching us things. You know, if I'm prideful, you know, I could lose out on what I'm asking for. We need to consider that. So tradition, you know, of the Pharisees, we could read more stories about them. They thought they should wash above the elbows, and yet when the disciples weren't doing that and others, they go, they got offended. Like, and I think about that. I've been out on the job site for years on construction sites. I can't count the number of times that I sat down. There was no water nearby. I just eat my sandwich. I wouldn't worry about the dirt and the dust from roofing and framing and concrete work. I just, you know, maybe you brush them against your pants and you start eating. And so these Pharisees were so worried about it. They were literally offended that, you know, you better wash up here because a germ might fall down to here or whatever, however they thought. And so we can get offended all over almost anything if we let ourselves. Pharisees show that well. So we need to think about that, because that wasn't a law of washing up that high. That was their tradition. And we have to be careful we don't hold our traditions above God's laws. So God has called us to change our views. He's asking us to change our habits. We walk in here from the world, so to speak, however many years or decades ago, and he's asking, over the years, begin to change. Begin to look at how you can live, how we handle things. Not to be people who quickly get offended or upset over something that is said. We should be willing to take a loss, which is really reflecting the mind of Christ. That's what God is asking us to do. Let's turn to John 15 and verse 12. John 15 and verse 12. So we've talked a little bit about the humility, and then it mentioned about the faith. So all these things tie in with this attitude and approach that a Christian needs. This brings up the concept of love, and all these overlap to help us to be better at not offending or getting offended. John 15, verse 12. This is my commandment, Christ is speaking here, that you love one another as I have loved you. What a big task that is. You know, we all think we love each other, our mates, our children, etc. But to the level that he loved, that is mind-blowing of what he did. And he says in verse 13, greater love has no one than this, than to lay down one's life for his friends. You are my disciples if you do whatever I command you. So the command here is to love. We know that God is love. And so it would be difficult to lay down our life for someone that has wronged us, you know, someone that offended us. How are you going to do that? And yet God says, oh no, you can love everyone but this person that treated you poorly or spoke words that got you upset. God is saying you have to get past that. You have to work through that. Verse 20, same chapter. Remember the word that I said to you, a servant is not greater than his master. If they persecuted me, they will also persecute you. If they kept my word, they will keep yours also. But all these things they will do to you for my name's sake, because they do not know him who sent me. Isn't that shocking? No, brethren, persecution could come at any time and in any way. And if we can't work out the issues that we have now, how will we handle those times, that persecuting and troublous time that is approaching on the horizon? Look at chapter 16, verse 1. We'll read a couple of verses there, because it ties in with what Paul, or I should say John, is writing here. He says, these things I have spoken to you, that you should not be made to stumble. So if we were to read the whole chapter, we begin to see all these items that Jesus lays out. They will put you out of the synagogues. Yes, the time is coming that whoever kills you will think that he offers God's service. And these things they will do to you because they have not known the Father nor me. But these things I have told you, that when the time comes, you may remember that I told you of them. And these things I did not say to you at the beginning because I was with you. So basically, all these items are coming, and he doesn't want us to stumble, to fall, to leave, to wander away because of we can't get along, or because we opened our mouth too much, or we got affected by something that somebody said to me. You know, I mean, it sounds really stupid when we're not in the situation, and I go, really, I could leave over somebody just making a random comment, but that has happened. So we have to be careful with that. Let's look at one last scripture, Psalm 119. Verse 165. So, brethren, with what we've looked at, letting go of offenses is part of learning to love others as Christ has loved us. It's a part of having faith in the God who gave his life so that we look at our brothers differently. Psalm 119, verse 165. Our focus really needs to be on God and on our neighbor. God tells us to love both. And it's not about our way. So we must have God at the center of our focus. You know, this kind of all ties it together. Psalm 119, verse 165, great peace have those who love your law. And then what happens from that? And nothing causes them to stumble. See, this is where we want to be. We need that peace. We need that belief. And why does this happen? Because God's law is opposite to those items that bring offense. You know, those that are unkind, they're going to offend more people, but God's way is about kindness. It's about peace. And so Christ had the perfect approach. He had it. He didn't. Let me just word it this way. I've thought about this for years. He treated others with sensitivity. In other words, he treated them as if they had thin skin. And that's what we all need to do. We need to treat others that are sensitive. We need to be very considerate to them, very polite, very kind. That's the way we should treat everyone, because it does bring peace. But then when others can offend us, we need to be thick-skinned. We need to be willing to take whatever they throw our way. Otherwise, how are we going to get through this persecution and tough times that are coming? God is asking us to prepare for that. Christ was willing to listen to people's accusations, their lies, their deceptions. He didn't overreact to their words and actions as we can. And so he's inviting us to step up to that with his help. And in 1 John 5:3, I'll just refer to that, for this is the love of God, that we keep his commandments. So we think about that word love. It's an outgoing concern. It ties in with everything we've read from different angles. It all starts coming together, that the humility we need, the faith we need, the trust in God, the love of God, all this comes together to help us to start recognizing to a deeper level that we don't want to offend anyone. And if we do, we can even apologize, even though we maybe didn't even step outside the law when we did it. It's still important to think about that. And so in the days ahead, let's think about the ways that we've upset others. You know, we've caused problems. We've caused others to become hurt. And let's think about the things we've allowed to distract us from the purpose for life. You know, because some of these things just pull life right out of us in situations because we get so worked up, so heated. And God is saying, no, don't allow that to distract you from why I called you and your purpose in the future. And with God's help, we can turn our lives around. He's asking us to grow, to be more like him. And we think about how God will help us to increase in his character, godly character, not our character, you know, but his character developed in us. And so no matter what events take place, he's saying, if I allow you to do that and you take hold of that, then you can stand through it all. See, it won't be us standing on our own, but God walking with us and holding us up and helping us. So the best way to view the statement, woe to those who offend, is to build a closer relationship with our Father in Jesus Christ, to invite them into our lives through their power, their strength, their wisdom, their plan, and to allow that to help us, because each day is an opportunity. You know, some days are kind of scary what comes our way, but it's an opportunity to increase in the faith, to grow in the humility, to express our love. And so all these steps that God gives us throughout the scriptures help us to develop so that we don't offend others, or so that we are not easily offended. So consider this: in the kingdom of God, no one will be offended. And that's where we're headed. So we need to practice these steps so that we're prepared, so that Christ one day said, you know, come, you blessed. You know, that we're ready because we've taken these steps, we've worked on it. Doesn't mean we'll be perfect, but we're growing and developing until that time when Christ returns and our bodies are changed into spirit beings. So let's look forward to that kingdom and prepare in these things so that we are ready, and he won't be saying to us, woe to you who offend. Instead, he'll be saying, you know, well done, thou good and faithful servant.